slowly rolling into it and off of corner number four. It's showtime at Skagit Speedway.
Into corner number three. Kolar sends it down low. Bryce looking for anything he has. Here comes Howard Voss. He gets it done in the Hornet A main tonight. Howard Voss leads lap 2 to 25 to pick up $1,250.
It's showtime!
The one car with the front of it that was junk, and another car with the back of it was junk. So I cut both of them in half, took the good part of one car and the good part of the other car, and welded them together.
The reason why I decided to, you know, move to Sean's number and use it was just because the memory of Sean was his V8. And, you know, I just kind of lived for racing and racing with his number just to remember him by.
Race him, and next thing you know, she's on the flag stand running this, you know, doing flag and all my quartermate. I'm like, where did you come from?
My experience, you got to have desire. It's a tough sport. Spend a lot of time away, and you definitely have to want it. You know, you can't just say you want it. You got to want it. You got to have that desire that drives you through a lot of the tough times. And so for me, that's what it's always been about, is coming back to why I do this. It's kept me around for this long. So
I was off for some reason and didn't race one night. And so I went over to the races later that evening, and he was down by the water truck, and there's a roller gate there, and it's, you know, still set up the same way. And he took his foot and he scribed a line through the dirt, and he says, "Don't even think about crossing that." I mean, he got it that dude.
Well, welcome to episode 6 of On the Gas, a Skagit Speedway podcast. He's Blake Anderson. I'm Eric List. And we've got another fun episode of the podcast. We just got off our biggest 360 race of the year, the Fred Brownfield 360 National presented by Bob Sergrim Brew, and our biggest Hornet National Hornet race of the year, the Hornet National presented by K-Pro Auto. We gave away $26,000 to Trey Starks in the 360 division. He's now got two crown jewel wins at Skagit Speedway in the same year.
In the same, nearly the same month.
Yeah, no,
Trey has kind of been on a different level this year, which has been neat to see. He's been so fast and had to earn it a little bit this weekend, which is fun. But, boy, really set himself up well Friday, and we'll talk about that in just a moment on how Friday's A-Main went that really set Trey up to be fast on Saturday.
Yeah, so Trey picks up the win Saturday, but Howard Voss gets it done in the Hornet National presented by K-Pro Auto. He takes home their biggest payday of the year, $1,250 in a race that really he kind of ran away with. He didn't face a whole lot of pressure. Steve Peters led the opening lap, and then Howard got away from him. And Peters would close in a couple times, but never really got within striking distance. But it was a two-day event, so let's, I guess, you know, I'll look back first at Friday and kind of talk about that.
Friday, Jesse Schlott felt the winner, and Schlotty has been so fast this year. We've seen him win with NARC. He's gone down and won Speedweek races with SCCT and then picks up a win up here. He's won in a 360 and a 410 up here. But I think the guy that was super impressive to me that really turned heads once again, Levi Klatt. Was second, and he just like the Dirt Cup and win, he was second here. And then Saturday night, Levi was in the mix. Actually, watching timing and scoring before the crash, I guess if we can skip it, we'll hit that. We'll get to that
on Saturday.
When we talk Saturday. Yeah, but yeah. Seth Bergman was third, and they ran out the top three. Trey Stark, so we talked about it. He set himself up so well. Trey was floating around the top 10. Then about four or five to go, it's like the light bulbs came on and he racked up four or five spots, especially a late restart, picked up a handful of spots that propelled him to a lock-in position in the points, because third to ninth in points after Friday night, Eric, 5 points separated him.
It was nuts.
It was like one spot here, one spot there, and you're going from a lock-in spot to starting second in a qualifier, and not even on the pole.
Yeah, I think there's two really interesting things to talk about. You mentioned Levi Klatt. Levi Hillier, what a good weekend he had to an extent Friday. He was high point, but you want to talk about how close that was in points? He was high point. He had made all the right moves to be, you know, probably high point at the end of the weekend, but lost a couple spots late in our restart and went from high point potentially to seventh back in points, and that's just how close that point system is.
And Levi said that he thought there was an opportunity to start on, you know, guarantee himself a front row starting spot, and decided to push the chips to the center of the table and go for it. And you can't blame him there.
No,
but ended up biting him. He lost a handful of spots, and that was the difference between a lock-in spot and the front row of a qualifier, which he was. And We'll talk about the Saturday portion in just a bit because that was super entertaining. But, yeah, I mean, that's with the points format the way it is, some of the guys were hating on it, but you got guys that were really making moves. And we had some of the teams saying you couldn't pass out on the racetrack. Well, Jesse Schlotfeldt started sixth and won. Justin Sanders went 24th.
What about Justin
Sanders?
Yeah. He did that in the B main, too, where he had to work himself into
like
a transfer spot.
Ninth in the B.
I think I passed that. I think he was outside the top 10.
I mean, Justin Sanders, he got up on the wheel. So it was out there.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly was. It just, how much did you want to gamble on going maybe above the cushion? And it was exciting to watch. And I can't remember. We had one more car go plus 11. So, I mean, there were plenty of guys out there passing.
It would have been Selzy?
Yes. Dominic Selzy went plus 6.
Oh, okay.
Jason Solwald.
Oh, yeah. What a 11. Good weekend. For. I mean, always a good weekend, it feels like, at SkyTopedia for Jason Solwald. He's always in the mix. He can just run the bottom, I feel like, better than anyone else can. When they're all beating down the curb, he's just cutting laps on the bottom.
I kind of wondered if it stayed green on Saturday night, would he have had a chance just because – to run the bottom, you need the laps.
Without all the cautions we had earlier in it,
you can't have the yellow with five to go. Mm-hmm. And when the top is as fast as it was, I mean, he was closing in on the leaders, chipping away at it. Would have needed some really, really, really good laps. But I wouldn't say it was completely out of the mix
Saturday
night. Steve Peters,
former
guest, was a Hornet winner on Friday night, which was fun to see. Steve hop back on the Hornet. Bryce Kolar was super impressive, and Howard Voss, our guest tonight, went 12th to 3rd. So guys were moving around on the Hornet. Steve Peters went 11th to win. Kolar went 9th to 2nd. Howard Voss went 12th to 3rd. The top three, I mean, those guys on a track that some drivers said you couldn't pass on, those guys did exactly what they said you couldn't pass. Yeah,
the Hornets are always fun because they'll lean on each other a little bit. They'll bump and they'll bang.
I enjoy the Hornets. I'll be completely honest. I enjoy the Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
They put on a fun show. That it may not be the fastest, but they lean on each other.
And they enjoy it. Like,
they
enjoy it. You can see the passion that they really do have for racing. Sure, they're not racing, this $100,000 sprint car, but they care just as much as those sprint car drivers do. We hope everyone that was involved in the accidents on Friday are okay. We're thinking of everyone of them and hoping, they should be all right, but, big shout out to them. And it was kind of a rough night in that sense, so hoping everyone's okay after Friday night. We retained most of the cars going into that Saturday. So
lost two.
Yeah. But I don't know, move to Saturday. What a shift it was between just where the cars were able to run, the track a little bit. It was another really fun night of racing.
Yeah.
No qualifying, but we still had heat races that were set off by points with the qualifiers, to round out our pole shuffle and all that fun jazz.
And Levi Hillier put on the show on the pole shuffle. I think he raced five times.
That was so fun. And I was watching that, and it was irritating because he kept making the same move and it kept working, and it was really fun to watch. But I kept waiting for someone to go, okay, you just have to take the bottom lane of one and two away from him. And it worked every time, and it's like, good for you, Levi, because you're going to take – like, he put on a heck of a show, and I told him that. Yeah, he said, hey, nice job in the pole shuffle, because that was fun to watch.
The pole shuffle was Levi Hillier hour.
Yeah.
I mean, that was exciting. I'll say this. Skagit Speedway, I'll be the first to admit, I'm a pole shuffle hater.
I'm not a big fan either.
Brought up the pole shuffle in one of our meetings in Spokane, I was like, this is dumb. I hate pole shuffles. But we've had two pole shuffles this year at Skagit so far, and both of them have been absolutely electric.
Well, you know what I think the big thing was on Saturday? Starting on the back straightaway.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal. More. I think we should always do the rest of the pole shuffles on the back straightaway.
More.
Because you saw what Levi did. He would throw sliders getting into one, two. It just created that little bit more that I think was really fun to watch and made good racing for the fans.
Gave him a lap and a half.
Yeah.
No, I admit, I'm
there with you. I don't usually like a pole shuffle either because usually, okay, 7 beats 8, 6 beats 7, blah, 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 blah.
I'll eat the crow there because, it was – they've been fun at Skagit. I've enjoyed them. It's easier on a quarter mile to put on a better show, too.
Yeah.
And like you said, the backstretch restart makes things – or backstretch start makes things more
I wouldn't
fun.
Have thought about that, though. I wouldn't have thought that would make that much of a difference.
But it does.
But it really does. And again, props to Levi. He was very impressive and very fun to watch.
Speaking of Levi, I didn't realize he took such a big hit when the spindle broke. I was in the shop last night and I saw the car and the Hulk it shifted the whole frame over.
I think he's joked they're still finding stuff that was bent from it.
Yeah. Oh, they were tearing it apart last night. It's like, wow, yeah, Levi, that tore some stuff up when that spindle broke. And I told him, I said, I didn't watch. I turned my head off him for like 15, 20 seconds and came back, and he's in the wall.
He was in the wall, but he could have ran up. I don't think anyone's going to catch Trey Starks, even if Levi had got to that.
No, I'm not saying you were.
I was just using this to get a transition. Like, Levi was really fast. Man, Trey Starks was on another level on Saturday. Like, he always is, but that looked like 40 laps that no one was going to beat him unless Trey beat himself.
His 360 has been on kill this year. Honestly, I mean, not to diminish anything, but it's probably Trey versus the field on Saturday, the way he's been running this year in the 360. He's just been, I mean, lights out in his 360.
It shows even when he goes out and just, you know, practices or qualifying, he's always, you know, maybe a second, well, not probably second, but,
not
you know,
a second, but
half a second, you know, quarter of a second, just faster than.
Yeah, he's, they've got it dialed in, that's for sure. It'll be fun, a fun month as we lead into Skagit Nationals with Kubota High Limit Racing. Obviously, that's a 410 show, but we've got the 360s coming up this week. We'll talk about it at the end of the show, but Trey's been, he's been on kill, another big check. They're going to Disneyland, if you saw our social media clip this past week. Apparently, Dom's going too.
Yeah, right.
That was neat to see Dominic run on the podium with him. They're two really, really close friends.
You know, I could talk into Dominic Saturday. You could hear he talked about it. They finally feel like they found something. He came, you know, looked back to Dirt Cup, and it wasn't a great weekend in the grand scheme. He was struggling. They were fighting the car. I think that's something he felt like was kind of the entire season. And now he's like, okay, they feel like they finally found something in their race car. And he said that Saturday. He made it. I don't think he was going to get by Starks. He threw a couple sliders on him that he couldn't get to stick. But he made it exciting. Yeah. And then he went and won at Grace Harbor. So the next night, Sunday.
You look at how exciting maybe the racing was there. Jason Solwald rounds out the podium. Mm-hmm. He goes 12th to 3rd. Colton Heath, 14th to 4th. And Robbie Price, 15th to 5th.
Now talk about moving through. That's plus 10 for two guys.
Plus 10 for two guys, plus 9 for Solwald. The kid that finished 6th, though, I think is someone that needs to be on every sprint car prospect radar. I think he's on a lot of them. He's 15 years old. He's leading SCCT points. I think he's leading now. Maybe Grasty's leading. I don't know, right in there. But
I thought Grasty was leading, and he's coming in.
He's right there, but he's won at Placerville already. But to Austin Wood, the kid is impressive. 15 years young. You look at the amount of talent, young talent we had here on Saturday that aren't even 16. Future Sprint Car Racing, good hands. Three A main cars under 16. Levi Hillier, 15. Austin Wood, 14. Austin Wood, 15. And Jet Barnes, 14. Jet Barnes made the A main. We had 49 cars here on Friday, and Saturday, Jet Barnes makes the A main. It was like his 8th ever sprint car race.
Austin Wood is?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he was leading SCCT points. Grasty was, but Wood had a good, strong speed week. Cole Schroeder, tough week for him. He's 3rd in SCCT points, but he got a cool little bonus with the Bud Ash Hard Luck Award. Got like $2,500 there. They had a tough weekend, but that was neat to see. Appreciate them doing the Ash family doing that, giving back to racers with tough luck. But, I think that was kind of the redeeming thing to me that stuck out to me is the young talent that was in that main event that wasn't even 16. Three drivers that you look at the West Coast sprint car scene, those are three drivers that I would say we probably won't see on the West Coast for a terribly long time because they've got bright futures in this sport.
And it's so fun to then just get them when they're here. And that's what you and I talk about, you know, when we get to watch the sporties. They go from the sporties up to that next class, and just those young kids that really keep the future of Skagit Speedway bright.
We get to see it weekly. And speaking of the sporties, they're back this week.
Yeah. But first, 360 points. Trey Stark, Jason Solwall, Colton Heath. Your top three, Hillier, Jesse Schlotfeldt. I guess we can talk about this probably at the end of the podcast, too, with points. But Trey, even after the win, still controls and almost has a 100-point gap over Jason Solwald back in second. So that win just continues to emphasize his...
Catastrophic is going to happen for Trey not to win the championship.
Yeah.
He's got her pretty much on lock. But it was a great weekend. Crowd was phenomenal. We saw a large increase in attendance this weekend, which is encouraging to see because this is traditionally been, I think, kind of a tough race for Skagit Speedway.
You know,
it's a high purse. It's a tough time of year. You know, in late July, it can be hot. it wasn't this weekend. We sold a lot of hoodies.
It was a weird temperature this weekend. Like Friday was overcast.
And cold.
Yeah. And then Saturday was sunny, but it was windy.
Yeah.
And so that wind never really allowed it to warm
Jeff
up.
Jackson, yeah. Because Friday, I don't expect it to be. It drizzled part of it. Wasn't calling for rain at all, and it drizzled most of the morning.
Weird.
Just a heavy mist, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But enough that it certainly affects the racetrack. And then Saturday, you're battling a wind. But no, we had great crowds. That was phenomenal to see. We really appreciate everyone coming out. We've got some big events coming up the next month. We hope we can see that. And we'll talk about at the end of the show some this next week and some exciting announcements that we have at Skagit Speedway this week. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Before we get into our guests quickly, Hornets, Howard Voss gets the job done. Bryce Kolar and Steve Peters, your top three talent. Kolar, Tazio Andreasen. It was really just the Howard Voss show on Saturday. Yeah. I mean, he got by Steve Peters on that second lap and just went cooking the rest of the way. I thought they were going to go flag to flag. I was so excited. I was like, well, this is going to be a flag to flag. And actually, I think Bryce Kolar may have got Howard Voss if they went flagged. I would have got really close because Peters was running second, and then Bryce just found that next level, it felt like. But
encouraging to see for Bryce that he's able to find something and get right in there.
Yeah,
but no, that was a good Hornet race, and I thought the same. I thought we were going green to check it on, especially after the way things went on Friday. It was like, oh boy, talk about polar opposites.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we had a really fun conversation with your Hornet winner on Saturday night, Howard Voss. So with that, let's head to our conversation with Howard Voss. All right, this week's guest, the winner of the Hornet Nationals, $1,250. Richard, Howard Voss. Howard, thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what a weekend that was for you. You lose a transmission, you lose, second, third gear Friday night, and then you put a new transmission in and pretty much walk away from the field on Saturday.
Yeah. Friday night, second gear went out on transmission, which is the gear I run in there at Skagit, so that really hurt my performance in the main event. So luckily I had another one sitting at the shop. So I had John Gunderson and Bob Brown put that in for me Saturday morning while I was at work. That seems to be holding up so far. We got the one race on it and it did good.
There you go.
How's that work out for you, Howard? You get stuck working on Saturday morning. You got guys get the transmission that put in for you. That seems like an all right deal.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I mean, it's good to have friends that know how to work on cars.
Absolutely.
That's all I can say. Yeah.
How long did that take him to get it put in?
I don't think it was that long. 2-3 hours, maybe. It's not a difficult process on that car.
Okay. So how did you get into Hornet Racing? What is your background in racing?
So my background, I grew up going to Skagit, watching the races ever since I was born. And, I season ticket holder most of my life, and I was sitting there in the stands I think it was 05 when they started the Hornets. And I'm up there in the stands watching the Hornets roll out on the track. I'm like, well, heck, I could do that. So about halfway through that first season, I had a car put together and out on the track, and I've been doing it ever since.
What's been your favorite car to drive? I feel like, there's so many different vehicles that – you can drive in the tuner class, back then the tuner class, now the Hornet track. What's been your favorite that you've driven?
Right. My favorite is still a Fox Body Mustang. They handle really, really well out there on that track. Their biggest downside is they don't have the horsepower to keep up with all the modern cars.
Yeah, especially those early Fox Bodies. They were maybe 140 horsepower tops.
So I can't picture one in my head.
The V6.
Yeah, I think the four cylinders, the max that from the factory, I think was like 110, 115 maybe. Yeah. So with our horsepower limit of 165, I believe it is, you just can't keep up with that low a power.
What's the process like to find a car that can meet those parameters? Because we have kind of tight guidelines to keep the competition close.
Right. Part of that depends on if you want the front wheel drive or the rear wheel drive. And I've settled into the rear wheel drive. I think they handle better. They corner better as shown, with what I can do with it now. But really nowadays you want a car that has the most horsepower that's legally allowed, and at a reasonable price. And, there's going to be good availability of other parts cars out there for, you know, when you damage your stuff.
So then how do you find those cars? You look in, you know, eBay, Craigslist, or you go in junkyard, yeah, or is it just kind of wherever?
For me, with my 240, it's pretty much all Facebook Marketplace. the downside of running the Nissan 240SX is they're, you know, the most popular drift car pretty much out there. So I will never see one of these in a wrecking yard or on a more normal car sales or car parts marketplace. So yeah, I'm pretty much relegated getting them from other 240 enthusiasts off Facebook Marketplace, and the prices for these things are crazy. I mean, they sell front fenders for this car for anywhere from $100 to $300, depending on condition.
Is it hard to find pieces too, or are they in supply? They're just not cheap.
Yeah, they're out there. If I needed fenders, I'm sure I could find about four or five of them on Facebook right now. But again, you know, you're looking at $300 a piece.
Yeah, that gets pricey quickly
for something like that. So yeah, and it also, to put it in perspective, the motor, the engine for this car was only used in this car in North America. So it's not used anywhere else in the world. It's not used in any other car or truck or whatever. And so many enthusiasts, you know, racing these things, drifting them, whatever, have blown these things up that it's getting really hard to find replacement motors.
Interesting.
I mean, I've thrown rods on three or four at least, and you know, I've been looking on Facebook almost continuously for a year for a good used rebuildable motor, and I can't find anything, you know, under let's say $2,000 for these things for something of unknown condition, whereas a lot of the other cars in the field, you know, you can get on Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, or a wrecking yard and pick something up for $200-$300. So I've definitely chosen the difficult route, but it's also a route that's fast, and it's starting to handle pretty good once I get it dialed in.
What took you down the road of going to a Nissan 240?
I want a rear wheel drive car. Okay. And I came, you know, I came to the Nissan from the Mustang, but I wanted stay rear wheel drive, and I wanted enough horsepower to be competitive. And there's really not a lot out there that fits our rules. I think you got the 240s, you got the Miatas, which, you know, they can do good, but gosh, they're so small. I drove Adam's Miata once a few years back, and for one race, and I won the race when I drove it. But so they're good, quick little cars, but they are so tiny inside. Definitely easier to find than 240, though.
How did you end up driving Adam's car?
I don't exactly remember. It was just one of them things where I was like, "Hey, you want to swap cars for a night?" And I let him drive the 240, and I drove the Miata, and that was it.
So you won in his. Where'd he finish in yours?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it about the Hornets? I feel like you guys are kind of your own group. You all get along so well. It feels like you guys have carved out your own niche, but you guys are a really easy group to deal with on race night, and you guys all kind of take care of yourselves, which is fun. It's unique to your division.
Right. I think a lot of that comes down to the affordability. You know, I mean, we do take it seriously, but also for most of us, because of the affordability, we're in it as more of a hobby, as something to do that we like doing. You know, it's our way of hanging out with each other and having fun. Compared, you know, I'm not going to say we're not competitive. We are. We all want to win.
Oh yeah.
You know, but you're in a 360 or 410 sprint car, and you know that's a serious job that you're doing. You're not just out there to drive around the track and have fun. I mean, sure you are too, but it's you know, a lot more serious.
Mm-hmm. What took you, I guess, do you ever see a day where you would run any other division but the Hornets? I mean, you've been running the Hornets for 20 years. You ever thought about trying to hop in a modified or something like that?
Yeah, I am working on getting the modified together. I have Mel Decker's old 22 car that I'm working on putting back together. Right now, I mainly need a motor for it. I got John Gunderson getting me some parts together to put a motor together. I probably won't have it out this year, but next year, if nothing else.
Oh, that's great. Then would you do double duty at that point, then still run the Hornet and the mod?
Yeah, I think I would, unless it really got to one interfering with the other, and I really needed to focus on something. I would love to do both of them.
Well, Steve does it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He says you couldn't. I want to go back to something that I thought of while we were talking about motors. I know sprint car motors, okay, you maybe can go a Skagit season, then you got to rebuild them, 10, 15 races on them. How long do you guys expect to get out of your engines? Is it just kind of run them until they blow up, or is there, something you do to kind of keep the maintenance alive with them?
Yeah, I think a lot, it depends on the driver owner. I do an oil change on mine about every 3 races, which I think is perfectly reasonable for, the amount of abuse these get there. Honestly, you could go probably a full season on one set of oil, unless you're seriously overheating it or doing something really bad, at which case you've got other problems to deal with. But, I go about 3 races on oil change. If I have time in the off season, I'll tear the motor down and check the bearings and everything, make sure they're good. But a lot of people just run it till it blows. We've got guys, Brian Michelson, I believe he's got 6-8 years on the motor in his car right now.
Wow.
Okay. I know he's had that car for a while.
It's efficient.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe Jim Kirkham put that together for him down at K-Pro Auto.
All right.
I knew that he was one of Jim's drivers. I know Jim and Brian are pretty close, so that would make sense. Absolutely would.
Right.
What was Saturday like? I mean, that's probably the most money you guys have raced for here at Skagit Speedway. Was the intensity a little bit different amongst the Hornet camp for you guys?
I don't think so. I'm really laid back and relaxed on race days, and unless something's going horribly wrong, I usually just hang out at my pit stall, chat with other people. There's really not a lot of anticipation or adjustment or anything we can do. So a lot of it's just out of our hands as far as that we don't have adjustments really we can make on the car. Air pressure in your tires, which I probably ran a little too low of pressure in for the main. I was pushing pretty bad. It's usually pretty relaxed unless something's broken, and then you're scrambling to help any of the other drivers get back out on the track.
What is it like down there on race night then? As you mentioned, there's not a lot of adjustments that you guys can make, so is it just kind of relaxed in between races, or is it, as you mentioned, if someone has something that needs fixed, you guys are all hands on deck?
Yeah, mainly, it's just hanging out and chatting with the other drivers, talking about the last race, the next race, any other plans for the year or the season. And if somebody's got something broken, there's usually half the Hornet pits helping them out if they need it, if there's room for it.
Yeah. Are you watching how the track develops at all throughout the night?
A little bit I do. I try to see if it's getting too dry or if it's staying sticky. My car loves a wet, gooey, sticky track. We go out for qualifying, and I'm very consistently a full second faster than anybody else in the 240, and that's not really anything to do with, I don't have any more horsepower out there than anybody else. It's just that the way my car's set up, it likes that track, and you lead it over on that right rear tire, and it'll go. Front wheel drives, you start giving it too much power, and you're just pushing in the corner, and you can't turn. So I was gonna say that frustrates a lot of the other drivers, thinking I got something going on that they don't got, but it's literally, it's just, I'm at the max power for our class at. Well, I'm just under. I think I'm 160. And, you know, that car handles those tracks really well. So that, you know, brings us back to Saturday's main event when they went out there and tilled the track and then rolled the top in. That did absolutely nothing but help my car in particular, because that just gave me a big, wide, sticky ribbon up on the top to run on.
How much did you, yeah, I was going to say, how much were you loving that when they went out there and watered? Like, oh, yes. At that point, you know it was game over.
Yeah, no, that was perfect for me. And I didn't know specifically what they'd done. I mean, we're sitting out there on staging, and we're all strapped in the car waiting while whoever's out on the track is doing whatever they're doing, you know. And I, you know, you can see the tiller running around, the tractor, but I don't know if they're just tilling or watering or what they're doing or how well they're going to have it packed in. You know, if had I seen all that, I probably would have increased the air pressure on the rear of my car a little bit to help me turn. But, you know, either way, it still worked out, you know, because that just creates just this sticky, gooey mess that my car really likes.
You don't have to give away your air pressure secrets, but I know sprint cars, you know, are low. They're maybe 10, 12, depending what you want to run in the right rear. Are you guys running low air pressures, or are you guys kind of higher?
Yeah, no, I do, and I have no problem talking about it. I you know, tell the other guys in the pits what I'm running, and because I run beadlocks on the right side of my car, my right front, I'm almost always around 15 PSI. Hmm. My rear tires, right and left, both I ran at 15 for the main event. I should have probably had them up around 18 or 20.
Wow, okay.
You know, just a little bit to help a turn, you know. But I can go, you know, on my Mustang, I would run my left rear down as low as 8 PSI, and my right, I've 10 or 12, depending on just how dry the track is and how much I'm searching for just that little bit of extra traction.
Hmm. What's maintenance like for you during the week? Is it just kind of, as you mentioned, change oil, or is there a night that you spend in the shop dedicated to getting the car prepared?
No, I spend an hour or two, you know, per day, depending on what the car needs. You know, knock all the mud off, clean it up, make sure there's nothing bent, broken, or anything like that. For the most part, it just sits on my trailer, and I do that outside on the trailer unless the weather's horrible or I need to do anything more major to it. Then I'll bring it in the shop and throw it up on the lift and get underneath it. But for the most part, it's pretty easy to do. You know, make sure the fluids are all good and full, and, you know, nothing's rattled loose during the race.
I always think people are curious to know what racers do for a day job. What's your day job?
So my current day job, I am an at-home caregiver.
Oh, okay.
So I take care of a woman who she's incapable of getting out of bed, so I cook, clean, tend to her daily needs.
Wow. That's a very noble job to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's tough sometimes, and it's an everyday job. I literally get, I normally count on having 2 days off per year.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Man. Yeah. So that's why I'm working. That's why I was working when my transmission was being put in. I fell into this, you know, I was a welder, fabricator, you know, doing aluminum boat building for, God, I've got about 12, 14 years in that. And then I worked at Boeing for 12 years, I think it was. And now I'm on to this.
Does that make it a little bit more difficult sometimes to race then, because your job is, you know, can be so demanding?
It is. It's tough because I have to be here every day, all day, every day, pretty much. And I can leave for a few hours a day. So that's, you know, I go down to the shop, tinker with the car a little bit, whatever it needs done. And then I'm back home working again. And then, you know, same on race nights, you know, I get her all set up, you know, to hang out without me while I'm not here. And then I go to the track, I race, race is over, I got to come home and, you know, get right back to work.
Hmm. So what 2 days off a year do you get?
Two days a year.
What?
Yeah. There's an invitational race up in Canada at Merritt Speedway that I go to every year. So I get that planned out on my calendar, and I hire somebody else to come in and do my job for me while I'm not here.
Okay. That actually brings up a good point. What type of traveling is there that's possible when you're running a Hornet? Can you travel much?
If I didn't have my job restrictions, I could, absolutely. Our cars are legal in quite a few other places. You know, I could run Grays Harbor. I could run Merritt up in Canada, which is, that's, so where I'm living in Bellingham, Merritt is actually a little bit closer than Grays Harbor for me. So if I were to run somewhere else more often, it would be up there, and I really like the track. But yeah, there's other places we can go if you have the time and money to get there, just like any other class. Yeah. You know.
Have you ever run a Hornet down at like Evergreen on the pavement down there?
I have. I've run two or three enduros down there.
Oh, and really?
It's interesting. I've almost ended up with a completely destroyed car anytime I've gone down there. So. It's not my cup of tea. We'll put it that way.
What are the enduros? Are they like a couple hour race where you're swapping drivers, or what type of style racing is that?
Yeah, they're around 4 hours if I remember right. You know, and it's all weather, and you know, sometimes they'll water the track if it's not raining or something. And I've been down there pouring down rain in a four cylinder. You know, and it's on a road course type of thing. So you're out there with, you know, 100 other four cylinders, and you're all running for 4 hours trying to win. You can change drivers if you want. I believe there's, you know, mandatory stops where you're required to stop for fuel or driver change or whatever, but you have to stop for a specific amount of time. The pumpkin smash enduro, they put, you know, pumpkins all over the track. Mm-hmm. And on the first lap, everybody's smashing these pumpkins with their cars. Then you have, you know, it's chaos down there.
I bet.
That's fun too. It's fun too if you can afford to damage a car that much.
Yeah, I've never heard of a pumpkin smashing drill. Yeah,
neither have I.
Yeah, that's in late October, November, one of the two. You know, right around pumpkin season.
I can't imagine that helps the car.
You're into my college football season at that point. That's probably why.
Yeah. Right.
I bet that's then, chaos, though, with, you know, the pumpkins being so slimy and everything that gets everywhere and just creates kind of a skating rink of a surface.
Yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah, it definitely limits traction, you know, and, you know, it's on the straights, it's in the corners, it's everywhere. And then, you know, they've got big tractor tires, you know, that they have on the inside of some of the corners. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not raining out there at the track or hasn't been raining for a day or two, those tires have water in them, and you'll get cars, you know, out of control, slam into the tire, and then now all of a sudden you've done 50 laps on a dry track and now that corner is soaking wet. Yeah, it's fun. Not something I can afford to do with my good race cars. Yeah. We'll put it that way.
How many race cars do you have then, if you say you're good race cars?
Well, right now I've got I've got three 240s. I've got the one I'm driving now. I have my now deemed illegal car that I'm not allowed to run at Skagit. And then I have another car that was a pavement car out of Canada.
Okay. Interesting.
And I still have my last Mustang, which is almost still race ready.
Really?
It would need a few updates. They've changed some of the cage rules at Skagit since I last ran it, but it wouldn't take much to put that car back out on track.
What is
list?
You offering? Blake Anderson. You want 1v1 head to head?
1v1.
Yeah. What's the Hornet tech process like? Because we talk about, I mean, how there is still a lot of safety. You guys have full roll cages. You have, you know, all the same driver suits, Hans Weiss, that, you know, any other race car has. But what is that safety and tech process like?
Just about every week we've got our tech guy comes around, and his biggest thing right now has been to make sure that our battery disconnect switch is fully functional, you know, so if somebody rolls out there on the track, you know, any safety crew running up to you can flip that switch and shut off all power to the car.
Okay.
Other than that, you know, once a year, you know, they'll go through, you know, make sure that you have, you know, your suit, your underwear, your helmet, it's all in good condition and certified. You know, your seat belts are properly mounted, they're still in spec and things like that.
Okay.
You mentioned a car rolling. What was it on Friday? Yes. I feel like Friday the A main was, I mean, we actually saw a Hornet get upside down. We had a couple of reds.
Yeah.
Was there just a full moon, something in the air? Do you think it was the intensity of trying to get ready for Saturday night?
Yeah, I really think a lot of drivers just overdrive their car and the track. You know, everybody wants to win, and some people don't want to drive slower than they think their car is capable of driving. You know, they're going to run full throttle all the time, and if there's a sliver of a hole there, they're going to try and stuff their car in it when their car won't fit there, you know. And
yeah,
and it's not necessarily even just that, but if they're driving beyond the limits of what their car and the track can handle, you know, if they get sideways, you know, they spin themselves out, mm-hmm. and they've got somebody right behind them, well, now you got two cars involved, and then you got those two cars hitting the car next to them, and the cars behind them don't have time to slow down, and that's what we had going on Friday.
A little chain
reaction. You know, I preach in the pits all the time to anybody that'll listen, just slow down. you want to win that race, you have to be there at the end. I have lost countless races at Skagit because I'm just going to sit back and watch all the drama in front of me and not be involved in it.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm coming out of the corner, I'm looking at the entire straightaway, everybody that's on it, all the way down to the corner, who's not holding their line properly, who's, you know, whatever's going on. And I'm going to slow down so whatever drama is going on in front of me, I don't want to be involved in it, mainly because I can't afford to fix my car every week. I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I just don't want to do it.
Hmm. That's a good answer.
Yeah, I will happily lose a race and keep my car in one piece.
Yeah.
Save you the headache.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't blame you there at all.
Yep. Yep. And overall, it works out. I'm sitting first in points this year. I've got a pretty decent lead, and I'm just not taking any chances. I want to finish the race. I want to finish every race, and if I get a good finish, well, that's good. But just finish the race.
You think that's the years of racing for you, and just, you know, maturity behind the wheel. You've been doing this for a long time, knowing that you want to win those championships, you got to, and save yourself time during the week. You got to put yourself in the right position to be able to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's something you do have to learn, and it takes time, you know, so it is what it is. You know, I'm definitely out there to win just as much as anybody else, but at the same time, you know, I know you have to be running. Your car has to be in good shape there at the end of the race. You know, don't hit anybody. Don't let anybody hit you.
We talked about the competitiveness of the class. Is this probably one of the most competitive Hornet class we've seen? Because up until this weekend, there wasn't a repeat winner. We had four different winners. Now you and Steve Peters both have two wins this year. But, you know, it was four races, four different winners.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty good season this year. We've got a good group of fast cars that are capable of winning every week. You know, it's not just me and Steve or now Bryce Kolar that showed up. You know, there are other cars out there that could win, mm-hmm. if they have the mental discipline to drive their cars in a way that'll let them win.
So right back to what we were talking about, kind of, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So, Blake, I don't know if you... I was talking to Mike Guffey on Friday. They run cool suits. He has a cool... Do you run a cool suit, Howard? Do you have a water... Do you have a cool suit?
I do not. Okay. Every once in a while I think about it because it can get pretty warm out there. It's, you know, especially we're sitting in the staging lanes for, you know, 15, 20 mm-hmm. minutes, you know, in the baking sun, and you can't take your stuff off, mm-mm. you know? So yeah, it gets really hot out there. Okay. Airflow in my car once I'm driving is actually really good.
Okay.
It cools me down once we're out on the track running. So on the track, it's not a problem.
Hmm.
Sitting in staging lanes, yeah, it can get pretty hot.
Hmm. I bet.
See, I had never even known that was something that Hornets had ran until.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Guffy about it.
Yep. Yep. We can run pretty much anything like that we want. You know, as long as it's, you know, driver safety equipment, it's not helping the car go fast or anything like that. Yeah.
What do you know what you'll run next potentially car wise if it just gets too hard to continue to find parts for these 240s? Do you have something in mind? You don't have to share it. Do you have kind of a backup plan?
Right. I have considered if I had to stop running the 240, I might go to a Miata,
okay.
but that's
All right.
probably not the best option, I don't think. I would almost be more inclined to go for a truck.
Really?
I think the Chevy S10s, I don't think, are the way to go. They don't have the horsepower, which is one of the problems that Dykstra's having, keeping up. But I think the Duratec Rangers, Ford Ranger with the Duratec motor from 04 to 09, I think, are pretty competitive horsepower-wise. Yeah. It's similar to the motor in the Ford Focus Midgets. Not exactly the same, but similar.
You say Ford, and then Blake, he gets excited.
Yeah, yeah. And then Toyota also has one of their little Tacomas with a 2.7-liter four-cylinder that I think might be competitive from a horsepower standpoint. But, you know, I don't know how either one of those would actually handle out up there on the track. Now, watching Powers in that red Ford truck from Saturday,
mm-hmm.
his truck's actually handling really well out there. You know, I like what I see from it, you know, and it took me a while to get around him. So, you know, it's definitely a possibility of running something like a Ranger if I had to switch from a 240.
Would you have to do anything to the truck to put a little bit more weight in that rear end, or do you think it would be pretty good to go? Do guys who run trucks here have to put some weight in that rear end just to get a little bit more traction?
You know, I don't know. I don't think anybody's adding or shifting weight in the trucks. I've never really looked into them that closely to see what they're doing with them, other than running the rear spoilers. And, you know, I don't know at our speeds how much that helps anybody out there. I know that the one on my car, in my opinion, that's there just for show. Maybe it does something. I don't know. It's there for the intimidation factor. It looks cool.
You know what? Sometimes that's all it takes. You mentioned speed. What type of speeds are you doing around the track? I know the track record's a 17.109, at least by what we've got recorded when we started keeping record again. I know I've been told there was a track record set before that, but when we've started keeping track, it's a 17.109
mm-hmm.
by Mike Guffey.
Yeah, I'm never even close to that, I don't think. I think I'm, you know, high 17s is the best I pull out of my car. And, you know, top speed heading into the corner, it would pure guess is somewhere around 70-ish. Give or take 5 miles an hour.
Okay.
You know, I don't have a speedo in my car, so it's hard to say.
Do some guys have that speedometer in, or is that something you lose pretty quickly?
No, there's actually, I think, quite a few people that still have their factory gauge cluster hooked up, you know, if for nothing else, then, you know, the water temperature and oil warning lights, but I run all aftermarket gauges for, I have oil pressure, water temperature, fuel pressure, and a tachometer on my car.
Okay. You actually bring up another thing. How much aftermarket stuff are on these cars, or are they pretty much stock from the factory?
They're pretty much stock. I mean, we can run, you know, things like aftermarket gauges. We are allowed air intake, you know, cold air intakes and different air filters. And we are allowed headers and pretty much any exhaust as long as it meets our noise requirements.
Okay.
Other than that, pretty much the motors themselves are all stock. Some people, I think, are running, you know, like an aftermarket ignition coils, stuff like that. You know, things that are aftermarket replacement that are still close enough to stock that it's not giving you any appreciable performance increase. Chassis-wise, we're allowed to play with our springs and tires. That's pretty much all there. Yeah.
Okay. Because you have to run DOT tires too, right? You can't run like a Hoosier or American Racer.
Right. We have to run a DOT tire. And now Hoosier does make a DOT approved dirt tire, which I would like to run. I have not picked up any yet. And that's something I argued with the track officials for years. You know, 'cause it's always been a rule, DOT approved tire. And Hoosier has the DOT dirt tires, and track management in the past has always said, no, it's still a race tire, even though it's DOT approved, you can't have that. Well, now we've got a car showing up this year with DOT Hoosier tires. It annoyed me because I had just bought tires the week before for my car, you know, regular non-race, you know, street tires. And our tech guy's coming around checking the sidewall of our tires, looking for the DOT stamps, and, you know, and questioning, well, why are we doing that this year? And, you know, he's explaining that we got, you know, DOT approved race tires out there, so he just wants to make sure everybody's DOT. And I'm like, wait, we got race tires now?
Interesting.
So, you know, going forward in the future, maybe I'll do that. I would like to. I think they would work better out on the track. I've run dirt race tires on my Hornets in the past for fun.
Okay.
And up in Canada. And one of the main reasons I advocate for being able to run a race tire, whether it's DOT or even a non-DOT, I think non-DOT would be absolutely fine. It makes the handling on these cars way more predictable.
Interesting.
And I think that would help out not just me, but everybody out there, especially the people that are struggling with their handling, because with the street tires that everybody's running, you don't necessarily know what it's going to do from one point to the next. And, you know, also they'll work good up to a point, and then all of a sudden they don't work at all. So, you know, it's they either work or they don't work. There's not a lot of, you know, with the dirt tires, they're way more predictable as far as what they're going to do when you're putting the power down, when you're trying to turn, when you're braking. It's they're a lot more consistent.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, different grooves and where the dirt tire is very similar.
Yep.
All right, Howard. Well, we thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on winning the Hornet Nationals presented by K-Pro Auto and taking home that nice $1,000. We asked Trey this. Any idea of what you want to do with that $1,000? Are you going to reinvest it, you know, back into your car? Are you going to just save it? Are you going to spend a little bit of it?
Part of it's probably going to go for my trip to Canada in October, you know, maybe maintenance items for stock up on oil filters, maybe get a new tire or two. That's hard to say.
Fair enough. Well, we thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on winning this past Saturday.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see you later. I love being there.
Yeah, thanks. We appreciate you guys coming out. We really do.
Well, welcome back. A good chat with Howard Voss there. Fun to see. I was very entertained with that
chat.
I was
too. That was really enjoyable.
And he was very informative and fun to listen to. That was a good chat. We've got some big weeks coming up here at Skagit, obviously, but we'll talk about the announcement we had this week before we dive into what's coming up this weekend. But our Kubota High Limit Racing Skagit Nationals coming up August 28, 29, and 30. Going to pay $126,000 to win this year. So we upped the ante a little bit this year.
Yeah. That's just another way that things are just showing how healthy Skagit Speedway, but Sprint Car and 410 Racing is in the Pacific Northwest.
And not only that, Friday is going to pay $20,000 to win.
Right.
So we're not just going to pay the standard.
That's 10,
person,
20, and 126, 10, 20, 126, I think, something like that.
So,
yeah.
So if you make all three features, $6,000 with start money across the three features. So working on that as well. But that's a super exciting announcement that we were super pumped to get announced yesterday. And hope you can get your tickets to that. Tickets are still on sale. You can get your three-day packages on SkagitSpeedway.com or call our office. We're here 9 to 5. And we'll get you taken care of. But get your tickets now. We're going to have some fun stuff throughout that week as well. A lot of fun interaction with drivers and teams as we head into Saturday's big $126,000 to win finale at the Skagit Nationals on August 30th.
Yeah, it's the largest paying race of the season. Rich is on the West Coast, and I think it's the largest for the Kubota High Limit Sprint Car Series, isn't it? Yeah, it's their highest.
Race on their schedule. It's the highest paying sprint car race on the West Coast. At the top of my head, fifth highest paying sprint car race of the year.
That sounds about right, because you've got
Nationals,
Husitz, Knoxville, Eldora.
195 is Nationals. Eldora was 200. Husitz was 250. Might be the fourth or fifth.
Yeah. Either way, you'll want to be here. Like Blake has said, get your tickets online, skagitspeedway.com. If you can't join us, watch on Flow Racing all three nights, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It'll be exclusively on Flow Racing.
Month away.
Yeah, it's coming quickly. You can get your three-day reserve ticket packages. Blake will go and screw in your reserved flag for you.
Exactly. Kevin and I will probably knock that out because we got a lot of them, so that'll be good. But no, this weekend's going to be another exciting weekend at Skagit Speedway, Eric List. We've got
I'm excited, Blake Anderson.
Back in action. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Night. All ladies get in for $5. You got to buy those tickets at the gate, though.
And you can get free Mardi Gras beads. Mardi Gras beads. They're pink.
We've got the 360 sprint cars, the Sportsman Sprints, and, Eric?
The IMCA Modifieds, Blake
and
Anderson.
What about the Modifieds this week?
Oh, they're going topless.
They are going topless. The Modifieds are topless this weekend, so that's
it's a topless
fun.
Saturday night at Skagit Speedway with the Modifieds.
Bump that up a month. Usually they were topless the first week of September, but we're going to do it this weekend. So we'll have the 360 Sporties and IMCA Modifieds going topless. Gates open at 5, racing at 7. Get your tickets on SkagitSpeedway.com or the Will Call office. And ticket office opens at 3 o'clock on race day.
What's really fun for the Modifieds is usually that's not an IMCA points, but it's going to be a basic IMCA points night. Basically, all the IMCA formats the same, so they're just going to race topless, which is always interesting. It's always a special thing for them to do, and they enjoy doing it. The drivers want to do it.
Unique.
Yeah.
So that's fun. It's different. Not a lot of places do it, so it's fun for us to do it here at Skagit Speedway. And obviously, then the following weekend, Monster Trucks.
Monster Slam.
Yeah, Monster Slam is back on a Saturday night and Sunday afternoon show. Eric's going to hold down the fort for me here. So
I know. How could you? You leave during Clay Cup, and now you got to leave during our Monster Slam show. It's like he's got bigger plans or something to go to called Knoxville. What a loser over here. Got to
go home.
Oh, shucks.
But yeah, that's
you got room in your carry-on.
Monster Slam will be fun. That's a big show for us here at Skagit. I know we've got a lot planned for that. We've got a lot of planning in our office, so that if you haven't got your tickets, get those now on SkagitSpeedway.com. All your tickets on SkagitSpeedway.com. Skip the ticketing lines on race night.
Buy online.
Sometimes we have lines at the ticket office, and it's like, well, if you would buy online, you could just have that QR code on your phone and walk right in, scan your phone, you're good to go. And get a walking taco on race night.
Yeah.
There's my tip for you.
Big supporter of the walking tacos.
Big supporter of the walking tacos. Well, Eric, great episode. Appreciate it. Six in the books now.
It doesn't feel – well, almost seven if we want to count the bonus episode.
Yeah, that's true.
But six, of the
– weekly radio or weekly podcast episodes.
It's been fun, Blake Anderson.
It has.
I'm enjoying this.
If you've got any ideas or feedback, certainly let us know.
Tweet us,
Sky Jet Speedway, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, leave a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, 5 stars, or, you know, I guess if you think this isn't a 5-star podcast, then keep your opinion to yourself.
Yeah. If it's not 5, then just let us know on Twitter.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we hope to see everyone here this weekend. And if not, we'll be back on YouTube as well, so you can catch the YouTube live. Other than that, you've said it. Gates open at 5, racing at 7. Get tickets online. It's GetSpeed.com.